Welcome to the GBC Sermon Podcast, a weekly podcast from Gymea Baptist Church in Sydney, Australia. I'm Mark Rader, Senior Pastor here at GBC, and I hope that you are available to hear the invitation of Jesus today. In today's message, we consider what we can learn about Jesus, his ministry, mission, and motivation in the account of his encounter with the Gerasene demoniac. One of our desires as a community of faith is to make disciples, and it's important that we don't just listen to sermons, but that we seek to apply what we hear. To that end, we have a simple discipleship menu that accompanies every sermon. The menus are a selection of activities that you can engage in on your own, with a friend, or even in a small group to put this message into practice in your life. You can download the menus from our website at gymeabaptist.org.au under the Next Steps tab.
Well, good evening, everyone. I'm reading from Mark chapter 5, verses 1 to 20, and I'm on the NIV. It's called Jesus Restores a Demon-Possessed Man. They went across the lake to the region of Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained, hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the impure spirit came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank and into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed.
It's good to have you here tonight as we continue our series in Lives Changed by Jesus. Carl, can I get you just to bring the house? Oh, thank you. You're doing it anyways. Perfect. Just the delay. Excellent. I can see people. That's even better. As we continue this series, and I don't know if you've been following along. I hope you have been. But there have been a number of themes that have kind of popped up in this series. So, for instance, one of the things that we have encountered fairly frequently is how Jesus welcomes those who are marginalized, right? Time after time after time, part of the change that we see in terms of what Jesus does is he welcomes those who are normally left on the outsides. And one of the themes over the last couple of weeks in particular has been the role of faith. Kind of two aspects of it. One, how sensitive Jesus is to faith. So last week when Belinda was speaking about the woman with the bleed who reaches out behind Jesus and touches his robes, and that touch Jesus identifies as being a touch of faith, which is different for some reason than the jostling of the crowd, which apparently is a touch without faith. Or 2 weeks ago when we examined the story of the Syrophoenician woman who comes to Jesus, and for whatever reason, Jesus recognizes in her that there is faith. And in both of those stories, what we find is that it's not so much about how much faith you have as it is about demonstrating and acting on whatever faith you have. And as you demonstrate and act on the faith that you have, Jesus meets that. He honors that. He matches that. And all that was kind of in the background as I came to this passage in Mark chapter 5, where there does not appear to be any faith. This is not a story about this man kind of hearing about Jesus and coming to him and asking him to help him. We don't hear Jesus say to this man, "Your faith has saved you, go in peace." In fact, what we have here is this kind of outrageous encounter, at least from our perspective, our modern perceptions of what it means for someone to be demon-possessed, and does that still happen, and how does it look like, and how do you know there's a legion of them, and all of those sorts of questions to one side. This is not kind of a pleasant encounter, is it? You can't say that this man has any faith. In fact, he is lost in the situation he finds himself in, isn't he? I mean, did you notice when Jesus says, "What is your name?" the confusion that exists in his answer? His response is, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And then he begged Jesus not to send them out of the region. So who's talking here? Is this the man speaking to Jesus? Are these the demons speaking on behalf of the man? I'm not sure we can answer it. I'm not sure Mark wants to answer it. He is completely lost in this. And then when the man comes out to meet Jesus, it's not a congenial meeting, is it? Right? When it says that Jesus got out of the boat and this man came to meet him, it's not as if he kind of ran down in the boat and said, "Hi, welcome to the region of the Gerasenes. I'm the local demon-possessed guy. If you want a tour of the tombs, I can give you like all the backstory." Well, that's not the deal, is it? In fact, the Greek word behind the word translated as meet can actually be used in military terms. So Jesus uses it in Luke when he says, you know, you got to count the cost of following me, and gives a couple of analogies, one of which is a king who basically has to work out, do I have enough troops to meet the one who is coming against me? Right? It's this idea of aggression. And the thing that the man or the demons yell at Jesus is also antagonistic, isn't it? So he runs to meet Jesus, and it's kind of like he's got his fists up. "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Are you going to torture me?" Well, that's not a friendly hello, is it? And so this man is utterly lost. His personhood, his identity has been erased, confused, mixed up in a horrible kind of way. And he is not coming to Jesus with faith. Even this declaration, I mean, which is kind of unique in the Gospels because the demons understand who Jesus is, you can't say that that's a statement of faith, is it? It's a statement of truth, but it's not a statement of faith. They don't believe that Jesus is there to do anything good for them. They understand who he is and what he could possibly do to them, but there's no faith. And so this story focuses us squarely on what Jesus does to change lives. And I also believe it focuses us squarely on why Jesus changes lives. Because this story actually amplifies for us a number of themes that have already been prevalent in Mark's gospel. And I want to draw your attention to them. So the first of them, perhaps the most significant, the one that's easiest to see in chapter 5, is the theme of Jesus' authority. I mentioned a number of weeks ago that if there were a calling card that Jesus had, in Mark's account at least, it would be exorcism. Right? He exercises his authority most clearly in exorcising demons, right? That's kind of the deal. His very first miracle in Mark's gospel is casting out a demon. And the people notice and they go, he's teaching with authority and he casts out demons. So there's something here about Jesus' authority, and it is fairly extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, fair is fair. I'm not sure how I would handle one demon, let alone an army of them. But so far in the gospel, Jesus has been able to handle one demon just fine, right? So when you put Jesus and one demon-possessed person in the room, Jesus wins. And in chapter 7, obviously a little bit further on, Jesus is able to do kind of long-distance exorcisms when we looked at the Syrophoenician woman. So, okay, he's got that going on. But how is Jesus going to go when he's faced with an army, like a literal legion of demons? Well, it's a very anticlimactic passage, isn't it? There's no Hollywood fight. There's no kind of special effects. There's no kind of back and forth of will Jesus do it or won't he do it? Is he going to come back or is he not? Oh, he's down in the count. It's an 8 count. Is he going to get it? He's up again. Nope, none of that. You, out. Oh, can we please go into the pigs? All right. Jesus' authority here is complete, like not pressured at all. Jesus doesn't sit down exhausted after the ordeal and kind of go, wow, that was a close one. If there's been 2,001 of them, I might have been in trouble. Jesus' authority to cast out demons, in this case, to rescue this man, is complete. And I think that's worth noticing. But all of that, of course, ties back into his very mission. If you have your Bibles with you and want to turn back to Mark chapter 3, we'll start up in verse 23 of Mark 3 in just a moment. But the religious leaders had a problem with Jesus. If you've been around, you probably heard that the religious leaders and Jesus didn't get on very well. Here's a summary of why. As far as the religious leaders were concerned, Jesus broke the law of Moses, the law that God had given to the people. In particular, they have a bunch of conflict around how they should observe the Sabbath day. And so the religious leaders looked at Jesus and thought to themselves, here is someone who is breaking the law and is therefore ungodly. Fine. Except that he was then performing the sorts of miracles that only God could do through, say, godly people. And they were at a loss. How do we explain these miraculous deeds done by someone who is obviously not godly? Now, instead of asking whether they'd got their assumptions right, they came up with a wonderful solution to their problem. Here's their solution. This is a conspiracy. This is an elaborate ruse to convince us that Jesus is actually godly, but in reality, the only reason he can cast out demons is because he is possessed by demons himself. Bingo. And Jesus kind of pokes some holes in that in Mark chapter 3, starting in verse 23. How can Satan drive out Satan? If a kingdom is divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand. If a house is divided against itself, that house cannot stand. And if Satan opposes himself and is divided, he cannot stand. His end has come. And then Jesus makes this statement that some scholars see as almost a bit of a theme of his entire ministry in the Gospel of Mark. In fact, no one can enter a strong man's house without first tying him up. Then he can plunder the strong man's house. So Jesus basically says, I'm not possessed by demons. You'd like to think that would be fairly obvious. In fact, I have come to bind Satan, to bind the kingdom of darkness and to plunder it, which is an interesting image to use of Jesus, isn't it? What's Jesus like? He's like a thief who breaks in and ties people up and nicks all their stuff. That's a bit of a different one, isn't it? Not my favorite. My all-time favorite is God is the drunken warrior in Psalms. That's my favorite metaphor of God. That we don't have any songs about that, and I don't know why. So Jesus basically says, I am here to plunder the kingdom of darkness. Everything that has been stolen, everything that has been taken away, everything that has been broken and twisted, I have come to bind the strong man and take it all back. Everything that he thought he won, everything he thought he had, everything he thought he possessed, I have come to break in and bring it home. I am the repo man. I have come to return all of it. And what do we find in Mark chapter 5? Jesus fulfilling that mission, but with an amplification. Just as previously, Jesus' authority had been demonstrated in his authority to cast out a single demon, and then also his authority to forgive sins, here we have the expulsion of an army. Jesus has said, I've come to bind the strong man, but here there's something kind of, there's an expansion to this, because this man, this Gerasene demoniac, is also a Gentile. So Jesus has crossed from the northwest corner of the Sea of Galilee to the southeast corner, and in doing so has kind of stayed out straight out of Galilee into the region of the Decapolis. 10 cities, thus the name, spread over a 200-kilometer territory that were all Roman. They weren't colonies, but they were city-states dependent upon Rome. It was Gentile territory. The pigs are a bit of a giveaway, aren't they? Because Orthodox Jews to this day do not eat pork. And so like a flourishing pork industry is probably unlikely to be found in highly Jewish areas. Jesus has come into the region of the Gentiles, and he has rescued this man from the kingdom of darkness. And that's worth noting. Jesus is not just a Jewish teacher. He's not just someone who's come to fulfill the Jewish law for the Jews. He's not just someone who's interested in that small little nation of the people of Israel. He's in fact concerned for the entire world. And his mission to bind the strong man and plunder everything includes the Gentiles. But there's a third thing that I think we notice here then about Jesus' motivation. And it's actually reflected in the passage just prior to this in chapter 4. We're told in chapter 5 that Jesus has kind of arrived from the boat. He's got out of the boat and then he gets back into the boat and leaves. And the journey across the sea was not uneventful. It's actually the story where Jesus calms the storm. Jesus is asleep in the boat and a storm kicks up. And it's so bad that the boat is almost swamped. And some of the disciples, who of course were fishermen on the Sea of Galilee and who understood what was going on, are terrified. And they wake Jesus up with a very disturbing question. Have a look in chapter 4, verse 38. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" Now, if I'd been Jesus, I would have been a little bit offended. First of all, teacher, that's the best you can do with what I've already done, with my teaching and my claims to forgive sins? That's a little bit bigger than teacher, don't you think? But secondly, and perhaps more importantly, don't I care? Why do you think I'm here? Do you think I just got bored in heaven and thought, I'm going to go slum it with some people for a while? That'll be fun. Like, the whole reason I'm here is because I care. And so he stands up and he calms the wind and the waves and says, just knock it off. And they do. And the disciples spend the rest of the trip kind of rowing in, kind of looking at one another going, who is this guy? Jesus rolls his eyes and goes back to sleep. That question, though, don't you care if we drown, echoes into this chapter. Because when Jesus and his disciples arrive in the region of the Gerasenes, they encounter a drowning man. Did you notice that three times we're told that he lived in the tombs? No one was strong enough to subdue him, completely overrun by impure spirits. Here is a man who is not just kind of experiencing hardship in his life, and it would be lovely if Jesus would heal him. Here is a man who is drowning. And there's a difference between struggling in the surf and drowning, isn't there? Struggling in the surf, you might still make it. Drowning, you will die unless there is external intervention. This man is drowning. He cannot help himself. There is absolutely nothing he can do. There is no faith for him to scrape up. There's nothing for him to reach out with and say, Jesus, I've touched your robe. Would you heal me? There is nothing he can do. Teacher, don't you care if we drown? Yeah, I do. Be still and get out of him. And just as Jesus calms the storm on the surface of the water, he calms the storm in this man's life. Not because this man had extraordinary faith or any faith to speak of, but because Jesus' mission, based out of his compassion, is to bind the strong man and plunder his kingdom. And here's a man who has been captured. And because of Jesus' authority, because of his power, because of the mission that he has been given by the Father, and because of his compassion, he rescues him. A life changed by Jesus. So if you've thought to yourself, you know what, I've really appreciated the last few weeks of hearing how I don't need to have a lot of faith, I just need to demonstrate what little faith I have. But for those of you who feel like even that bar is too high, because there are times that it feels too high, doesn't it? There are times when it feels like I don't have any faith to gather. I have nothing to give. I have nothing that Jesus will match. I have nothing that Jesus will honor because I'm drowning here. I'm done. The metaphorical demons just are overwhelming me. I have no recourse. I cannot help myself. Jesus has come to help you. It's pretty simple and incredibly profound. But I want to draw your attention before we turn our attention to communion, and I hope you can see why. I want to turn your attention to the end of the story. Did you notice what happened? First of all, there's the pigs thing. Anyone else confused by that part? Yeah, I see that hand. All right. I think it's an extension of Jesus' care. Of all the reasons that I've read for why Jesus allowed the pigs to destroy the local economy, because that's what he did, right? The Gerasene Guardian would have read, local rabbi destroys economy, pig herders looking for work, right? Like that would have been the headline. So well, part of the reason why I think they said, can you please leave? But one of the most significant reasons why Jesus may have done that is to demonstrate the depth of his care. That if I have to choose, Jesus says, between the good of one man who is drowning and the local economy, I will choose the one man every time. The economic cost of saving this one man doesn't even come close, which would probably bear some reflection. But then at the end, all the crowds come out and they say, hey, can you leave? You're bad for business in lots of ways, and this is all wonderful, but really you're freaking us out. And the man, we can understand why, begs Jesus, can I come with you? I mean, who wouldn't, right? Oh, you just saved me from drowning. Can I come with you? You're like really powerful. I'd like to stick around with you. And Jesus goes, no. Go home to your old people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he's had mercy on you. This man becomes the very first missionary in Mark's gospel. After spending approximately 10 minutes with Jesus. Let's be generous. Let's say it took 3 hours for the pig herders to run into town and get everybody to hear what happened and everyone to come back and send Jesus off. Let's say it was generously 3 hours. This man has spent he's been a Christian for 3 hours. He says, can I follow you? And Jesus says, no, you know enough. I want you to go tell people about me. And notice what he's supposed to tell them, right? Jesus doesn't say, no, go and explain the Trinity to people. Go and explain suffering and goodness and all that stuff. And you go and explain that. Nope, he just says, go and tell him how much the Lord has done for you, how he's had mercy on you. And the man goes, I can do that. I can do that. I mean, it would have been a really short Q&A afterwards, wouldn't it? You know, this is what Jesus did for me. I've got a question, who's Jesus? That's a good question. He's a guy in a boat. Heavy sleeper, I hear. do you have any other questions? Because I don't have any other answers. What's interesting is if you follow the course of Mark's gospel, in Mark chapter 8, Jesus returns to the region of the Gerasenes. And there's a crowd of 4,000 people waiting to see him. A crowd of 4,000 people who follow him for 3 days to hear his teaching, and to be miraculously fed by him. Now, we can't prove it. We can't actually say, well, it was obviously the Gerasene demoniac guy or the former Gerasene demoniac guy, but it seems plausible to me, doesn't it? I mean, when Jesus was last in the Decapolis, people were saying, can you please not be here? And when he returns just a few chapters, weeks, months later, 4,000 people come out to see him. spend 3 days in the wilderness listening to his teaching, ignoring everything else in life to find out more about the kingdom of heaven? Doesn't it strike you as plausible that perhaps this man has done exactly what Jesus has asked him to do? So I don't know what bar you think there has to be for you to talk to other people about Jesus. If you've been following Jesus for more than 10 minutes, go. Go to your people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he's shown mercy to you. Off you go. Is that bar low enough for us? You need no faith. None. Because Jesus, his whole mission is to rescue people from darkness. And he cares for each of us. And he has the power and authority to do it. And then, with no faith and next to no information, he sends us to participate with him in his mission. Lives changed by Jesus. Can we find ourselves in that somewhere? It's a remarkable story. A story that reminds us, I think, not only of Jesus' power, but also of what he was there to do. That he cares. That he's filled with compassion for each of us. And for those of us who might find ourselves drowning, for those of us who might be kind of metaphorically overwhelmed, for those of us who might have been saying to Jesus, listen, you just want to take all the good stuff from my life and make me do a bunch of bad stuff. Jesus wants to save and transform our lives. So it seemed appropriate to conclude our service by talking about communion. A demonstration, quite clear, of Jesus' power and authority over sin and death, about his compassion for each one of us, and of his ministry, his mission, ultimately, to rescue us all.
In Jesus' rescue of the Gerasene demoniac, a man who could not help himself, we are reminded of Jesus' authority and power, of his mission to bind up the strong man and plunder him, and of his compassion for those who are drowning and unable to help themselves. The invitation to participate in the mission extended to this man who had spent only a few hours with Jesus is also a challenge for each of us to go to our own people and tell them what God has done for us and how he has shown mercy to us. Don't forget to check out the discipleship menu for this sermon and to join us for the Big Three this week. This midweek podcast is another way we hope to apply what we've heard. This week, Matt, Jess, and I will be unpacking three questions raised by the sermon you just heard. If you'd like to take your next faithful step in your discipleship, make sure you download and subscribe to the Big Three everywhere you listen to podcasts. We'd love for you to join us for one of our services this weekend. You can join us on Friday mornings at 10 a.m., Sunday mornings at 9:30, or in the evening at 6 p.m. Our 9:30 a.m. service will continue to be live streamed, and we'd love for you to join us online at www.gbconline.org.au. Until then, God bless.